Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now it's time for the Thursday interview, and joining me this week is former Thornishton Minister MEP and member of the Gender Equality Advisory Committee to the G7, Frances Fitzgerald. You're very welcome to The Hard Shoulder.
Thank you so much, Mandy.
Now, Frances, when you're doing these type of interviews, I guess, which is, you know, kind of about your career, you start at either the beginning or the end. But when I was looking through your kind of career, we tend to think of you as very high profile and very high achieving national politician. You know, you've been very successful, but you have an incredible amount and a body of work before you ever came into the public arena, working in communities, working in Ballymun. Maybe just tell us a little bit about that, because I think we sometimes pick up your career when you hit politics, but you'd done an awful lot before that.
Well, yes, I did a social science degree. My father was in the army. He'd done a lot of voluntary work himself as well. I didn't come from a political family, although the name is well known in Irish politics, but I didn't come from, Garrett's family, for example. And I did social science. My father was transferred to Dublin when I was 13. I went to school in Sine Hill with the nuns, the Dominicans, whom I really liked, and I credit them with a lot, I have to say. And when I left school, I did a social science degree. And I really loved it. And it formed the basis, really. You don't think when you get the opportunity to go to college how formative it's going to be as you get older in your career. But a lot of what I learned at that time actually really sort of informed me when I was a minister, actually, and even Minister for Justice. Of course, I never planned to be in politics, Mandy. I was doing social work. I worked in Ballymun as a social worker in the Child and Family Centre there for 10 years while I was having my children. I have three sons, and I did part-time, full-time, no work. I'm one of those typical women of that era who was kind of combining work and family life and having the opportunity to do that.
Coming in and out,
In and out of the workforce. I worked in St. James's Hospital, and I worked in Hospital 6 there, which was providing mental health services for that entire inner city area, which I really loved. And then I got married, went to live in London, and worked in inner city London.
Yeah. So what was the moment then when you decided, okay, I'm going to take all of this, or was there a moment when you said, or did somebody approach you and get involved in actual politics, being elected?
It was very gradual. I was 42. I was 42 when I was elected, but I got very interested in equality. I think it was when my first son was born in London, and I got involved with an organisation called the Childbirth Trust, which was about just supporting mums at home, basically, and making sure women had a voice in maternity hospital. Still an issue to this day. And I got interested in feminism. I got interested in reading about the Germaine Greers and the Betty Friedans and the illness that has no name, as she described women's status in America at that point in the 70s and 80s. And I came back to Dublin. I had young children. I had one young baby, and then I had two more sons. And I got involved in the Women's Political Association out of interest, really. Mm. Not because I wanted to be a politician myself, but I got interested in equality. And then and women and the lack of women. And I remember the first time I ever went into the Dáil with them, and I looked down, I saw all these men. I actually could not believe. And it still is. It's still only 22% of women. So I got more and more interested in helping women to be elected and having a voice. I ran big seminars in Dublin with the WPA. Most people won't remember them now, but we'd get 1,000 women to meetings in Dublin to talk about the environment, to talk about, you know, women's role, to talk about combining work and family life. Oh, really interesting topics.
It was an incredible organisation, really, when there was no other outlet for that kind of voice. When you're talking about the progression of your career, it very much sounds to me like, you know, you were constantly looking at an issue and filling a need in that issue rather than for your own, say, ambition. But of course, to be as successful as you are, particularly in politics, and we know this, you got to have a little bit of ambition for yourself.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed work. I enjoyed the social work grounded me quite a lot because I knew what the issues were in a particular area and what families were coping with. And that's what I was interested in. If you said to me, was I ambitious then? I'd probably say not particularly. particularly. Mm. I'd say I was doing what I enjoyed and the work was really interesting. And then I got more and more interested in politics as I saw what was happening. But it was kind of on the outside. Mm. And I was became chair of the National Women's Council. So I do think I had, looking back, I had leadership ability, which I probably didn't recognise in myself. Mandy, I was very shy in school. You know, it took me a long time to be confident doing public speaking, all of that. As you progress in a career, people don't believe that sort of thing. But I never, when I was elected to the Dáil, the very first time, I remember thinking, this is fantastic. I didn't think about becoming a minister or a Taoiseach or anything. I was so happy, you know, to be elected. It was an amazing new venture for me. I had been chair of the Women's Council. And it was there that I really got a handle on all of the issues like of LGBTQI, mental health, women's health, all of that. We were working on that. I was voluntary chair for 4 years with a great team. Mm. You don't do anything on your own. A fabulous team. So it kind of evolved over time. But I'm sure you're right. When I saw opportunity, I kept kind of working and getting involved. I was very interested in everything I was involved in.
Yeah, no, I don't mean that in any negative way, because I do believe you can actually progress in your career by being a leader and not just because you're ambitious. I think sometimes people mistake success for pure ambition when it's not always
the
case.
True.
I heard you speaking last year at an International Women's Day conference about women going into politics now, and you were very, very emotionally invested in this. You know, you didn't get emotional, but you were, you seemed quite annoyed and upset at what women who are entering politics have to put up with now. Do you think, you know, if you were a young person, not that you're not young, but if you were entering politics now, you'd give it a second thought because of that?
I don't think I would. Mm. A lot of the women I come across, they just get in there and they do it.
But they shouldn't really have to, though, should they?
Yeah, but it is tough. Mm. But I think politics is quite a tough profession. I think lots of professions are tough, actually. But politics is very full of kind of great successes and great defeats for the vast majority of people. Some people get by, but most of us don't. And it is, you know, it has its great moments of success, of being elected, of being a minister, of getting things through, and then it has the downsides as well. I feel very passionate about women in politics because I just think it's too important to leave to, you know, men alone. I feel we need a critical mass of women in there. Critical mass means 40 or 50%. Mm. You know, if you're in a room full of women, you're in a room full of men. If you're in a room with a good mix, I think you get better results, better creativity. You find the solutions more. And there's a lot of evidence that says when women are involved in politics as well as men, the topics that you discuss actually change which
yeah.
I think is really interesting. Mm, mm. And there's more and more evidence of that. And we have to get women more into the field of economics and finances as well, because that will determine more about where the money goes and the kind of things that are important, for example, childcare. You know, I've no doubt if you've got more women, you will have childcare higher up the agenda than it has been traditionally.
And of course, it's not just about solving childcare for childcare's sake or for family arrangements. It ultimately affects the employment landscape and gives us more access to, and more people access to that. Let's just talk about your political career there. You mentioned that it's, you know, there are highs and lows in political careers. Do you see a high point looking back as your time as either a minister or tarnished that? And is there something that you look back on now and go, I wish I'd done that different, or I regret?
I suppose it's a personal level. I would always say, God, trust your gut, you know, more and more. I can't think of a particular instance, but, you know, the personal kind of values, God, just always stick with it. And I did as much as I could. I don't have huge regrets, but I certainly, when I had a very tough time in 2017, I really thought, you know, it was so traumatic and so stressful. I thought, my God, could I encourage women to go into politics? You know, I really felt that for a period. And then I got over that and thought, yes, it's important enough to have women in there.
And did that scar you for other decisions that you made? I mean, you decided this year not to go again for the European elections. Has that kind of sat with you since it happened?
Yes, I'd say it has a bit, although I have, you know, I have managed it. I mean, I have been resilient around it. I mean, I was reading the extract from Owen Murphy's book in the papers on Sunday, and I actually was very shocked about the terrible crisis he went through. And I didn't know anything about that when I was a minister, and I was a minister serving with him. Did it mark me? Oh, definitely. I think you deal with the past and you move on. I think I read something in Hillary Clinton's new book the other day where she said, you don't forget the past, but you move on.
You move on, yeah.
You move on, and that's very important. And I did manage to move on. But I would say I had a period of definitely sort of post-traumatic stress. I was leading a trade mission one day, and I was back within a couple of days, and there was a motion of no confidence in a potential election. And I was in the room with Leo Varadkar saying, I'm going to resign, because I had decided the night before that I couldn't force an election on people who didn't really want it.
And you did offer that up, because you didn't want
the
government.
It was very, very tough, and of course, I felt it was unfair. And in the long term, the Charging report showed that there wasn't any substance to what was being said.
But that's an important part of it, isn't it? You were vindicated, you know, absolutely. And the report, but do you feel that when that report came out, I know the Taoiseach at the time supported you and he was been vehement in his...
Well, you don't get your job back,
Mandy. You don't get your job back. But also, you know, it's not really... You don't get the level of...
Of course you don't. I mean, that's politics.
But that's politics.
But I was very fortunate in the sense that I got a great reaction from the people of Dublin when I went out campaigning in 2019. And I had a really good term. And in a sense, there's nothing like the vindication of the public, because they were coming up to the street and saying to me, we don't like what happened to you. There's quite a sense of justice with the public out there. And I certainly got that. And as he asked me, have I got over it? I have. But as Hillary says, you don't forget it, but you move on.
You move on, yeah. Well, you did move on, and off you went to the European Parliament. Tell me, like, what that's like as a politician, you know, deeply embedded here in Ireland, then suddenly you're taken off to Brussels where, look, let's face it, most of the decision making is happening there now that we ultimately have to deal with. But, like, what's that like as a person, having to suddenly locate over from your family once a week? Or did you do that? Did you commute?
Yes, you're travelling a lot. I mean, it's quite exciting. I would really recommend it to anybody who's interested in European politics. I mean, I did the 5 years and I felt I didn't want to continue, not because I didn't enjoy the job, but I wanted to locate myself here and be involved in issues I'm interested in here and work with organisations here. It's very different atmosphere to the Dáil. It really isn't adversarial at all. It's so different, it's hard to believe. It's very cooperative. People have different, very distinctive points of view, all the different political parties. But there isn't that adversarial up at their heads. You know, it's completely different. And people just get on and find a solution. There's a lot of compromise.
Yeah, and I mean, when I worked in the Department of Finance, spent a lot of time out there as well, it kind of took me a while to get my head around that ultimately it's a collegiate offering. It's set up to find consensus, to listen and find, because it doesn't work if the project is too hefty on one side or another. So, and did you enjoy that Brussels experience?
Oh, I did immensely. I mean, I managed to have a very good experience because I think of, you know, what I had done in Ireland. I was able to operate at kind of quite a high level there, and I was able to influence a network and get things done. I got the first ever directive on violence against women through, and that was really important to have that achievement. That will be implemented in every member state, and that is such a big issue now, along with trafficking, and these issues are so big right across Europe. So, you're working with people from other countries, and I mean, sometimes you'll find, you know, the person who's in the socialist group or the Greens, they won't come to the consensus, and you have to really work hard at it, or indeed in my own party. But you know, you do get there in the end. It's amazing the amount that gets done there, and it is a leader. We forget this about Europe. That, you know, the European countries and the EU is a leader in democracy, and democracy is under threat at the moment. I've just come back from Hungary, and really, it's really disturbing what's happening there, and that's within the EU bloc.
Yes, yeah, and I mean, we won't even get started on America. We'll be talking about that for the rest of the time. But yeah, you mentioned that domestic violence, a piece of legislation that's now right across the EU. We'll be doing that here. You don't strike me as somebody who, even though you didn't go for Europe this time, is in any way retiring from business or active. So what are you up to now?
Well, I don't believe in the word retirement. I never have. Of course, everybody says it when I said I wasn't going for Brussels. They all said, oh, she's retiring. I don't really believe in that concept. I think, you know, you keep doing what interests you. And I'm involved in organisations here like Ruhama, which deals with trafficking. Trafficking is very real in Ireland. We have to, they say, hidden in plain sight. We have to alert the public more to it. We have to rescue more women, find exit routes out of prostitution. I think prostitution right across Europe is People are very ambivalent about it, actually. You know, we could not get agreement in the European Parliament on an approach to prostitution.
Why do you think that is?
I find it extraordinary. It's legal in many countries. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's misogyny myself. I think it's the remnants of inequality as regards women. I think we really need to examine it more. And trafficking, of course, is intrinsically linked with it. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those areas. I think it's new frontier inequality along with pornography, mm-hmm. And the pressures on younger women, particularly younger men. We really have to start looking at this more and more. So, I think there's huge work to be done there.
Yeah, and it's one of those societal issues that is, if left unchecked, bound to get worse because of things like pornography and the online platforms that they have now. It's not something that's going to just eke itself out, is it?
No,
it's actually going to...
I mean, it's worth $235 billion in the States a year. Huge criminal gangs, it's as big as drugs not
yeah.
bigger.
Yeah.
So that is an area that is really hard for us to believe, that women are being brought over here from Nigeria, from Ghana, from Egypt for sexual exploitation, but they are. Mm. And men as well, mostly for labour exploitation, and mm-hmm. you have domestic exploitation as well. So I think this is that's one of the things I'm doing with Ruhama. I'm also looking at being involved in a voluntary capacity in some of the development agencies, because I was on the development committee, and I'm involved, obviously with Fine Gael. So I find things to amuse me.
I'm sure you were going to get to that. Yeah, I want to talk to you about the Fine Gael stuff, because you and I spoke the last time just on the morning of the results of the local elections, when Fine Gael did really well, and every time we mentioned Simon Harris, big smile across your face. You seem to be incredibly proud of him.
Well, I guess I did recruit him at 20 when I went to meet him in Boswell's, when he wrote into me when I was appointed leader.
And that's
Senate.
How that happened. He wrote into you.
Into me, and I met him, and I was just recruiting somebody to work with me on a daily. You know what it's like in the Senate, Mandy. Every day you have to bring up some topic. So every morning he and I'd be on the phone and saying, what will we drive the leader of the government crazy about today? And we'd be inventing the various issues we'd bring up quite seriously, obviously, although I laugh about it now, but not because it wasn't serious. So I met him in Boswell's, and he was in the middle of his degree, but he actually wanted to work in the Dáil in politics, I think primarily because of his experience with his brother.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw him then go from, working with me as sort of PA to being elected in the local council, to being elected at TD. And then he ended up in cabinet, and I was still there, Mandy. So I've shared a long journey with him, and I do think he's got great capacity, yeah.
And what about Fine Gael in the elections then? So look, we all know the Taoiseach said earlier this week it's waiting now on the finance bill. We think this day next week we'll finally be in an election mode. How do you think they'll do? Are they well prepared?
Yes, I think Fine Gael is well prepared. I mean, he does bring this incredible energy. We have a lot of new candidates, so that's a challenge, making sure the new candidates, really get to know. But of course, they are known in their constituencies. Mm.
And in that, are there the old candidates, are they working with the new candidates? Is there that sort of crossover transitioning happening?
Yes, I think there is a certain amount of that. We'd certainly like to see that, of course. I think for the new candidates, a lot of them are councillors already. They have various business backgrounds, defence forces backgrounds, business. I've been canvassing with quite a few of them. We've some great new candidates, great women and men, but I'd love to see more women being elected into the Dáil, even though we have the quota.
Do you think the quota is going to make a difference?
Well, you see, just having a quota on its own doesn't mean you'll get 40% elected, as we saw before. We had 30%.
And when you just explain, sorry, Francis, to interrupt you there, explain the quota system and how it's actually working, because it's based on financial penalties, really.
Yes, it is. And basically, every party now has to run 40% of either sex, women or men. And of course, it has meant that the parties have recruited more women, because there is a financial sanction if you lose quite a lot of your funding if you don't. But that's only the start. At the end of the day, the public have to vote for you. And you also have to be in what we used to call winnable seats. Mm. I mean, you could have women running in a lot of constituencies where, like, I'm not saying this is the case now in any party, but like often, women mightn't be the most favoured candidate because they wouldn't be as well known as some of the men.
Yeah, and that lends itself to accusations of tokenism.
It does.
Yeah.
But what it does give you great experience of running. Now, it's not easy to lose. Mm. So if some of these women or men lose a lot of them may not continue. And it is about building up experience, whether you win or lose. I mean, I did 11 or 12 elections. I lost three, I won the others. Mm. So you do have to kind of commit to it. Not easy when you're maybe for the first time you run and you lose. So, I mean, look, we're hopeful. You know, we feel we've a good story to tell of full employment in the economy, but there's big challenges out there too.
No doubt. So you mentioned you're out there canvassing. I presume in Fine Gael are getting an okay reception on the doors?
Yes, I think it's pretty good. I mean, people have quite a bit to say. It doesn't mean, people are concerned about all of the things you know, we read about in the newspaper. People are concerned about health, they're concerned about housing, they can be concerned about local transport. The question is then, what are they going to do with their vote? Are they going to, you know, keep it with the current government, or is there an alternative?
So you've been canvassing in all of the general elections. How would you compare the reception now to, say, 2016, 2020?
Interestingly, I would say the mood is good. Mm. The overall mood, it doesn't come across to me as an angry mood. It comes across to me as kind of a concerned mood, which you'd expect. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
It certainly will. Now, the canvassing skills won't go amiss if when the presidency comes up, you might be somebody who would throw your hat in that ring. Do you think that's something you might consider?
Well, a lot of people say it to me. I get it said to me, you know, quite a lot. That would be a very big decision. And I, you know, I'm kind of focused on this election. Let's see how this goes and, you know, how Fine Gael does. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but it's a very challenging campaign, as you know, Mandy, that campaign. So I'd have to see where I'm at that particular point and what the opportunities may or may not be, who's interested. You know, there's a lot to think about with a decision like that.
Yeah, there are very difficult campaigns. I think it's because they're focused on the individual rather than a party.
They've been quite unfair in the past as well and tough on people. I think people have suffered quite a lot on those presidential campaigns. But look, you know, nobody forces you to go into politics, so you deal with whatever the situation is.
Yeah. Francis, just before I let you go, I just wanted to kind of get your assessment on where you think, because I know equality is important to you, I know women in politics is important to you, the domestic violence thing is an issue that you've obviously championed. Do you feel like that the gender thing has moved on vastly since when you started down this road of working in those communities in Ballymun and over in London? Or are you kind of going, the dial hasn't really changed? Or I'm trying to get a sense, are you hopeful? Do you think that some of the elements worked and are we going in the right direction at least?
Yes, I think overall right direction. Someone said to me the other day, oh, we've heard enough about, you know, inclusivity, gender diversity, etc. There is that little sense of kind of it's in the box and we ticked it. But actually what you find as you sort of get older and you stay involved in all of the issues is that the issues change. You know, I wouldn't have thought violence against women would have become such a dreadful phenomenon worldwide as it is. I think 20, 30 years ago, I might have thought we'd get more sophisticated around that. People would understand, men would change, and the societal attitudes would change. But actually, we need more leadership than ever on that topic. Mm. The critical mass of women involved in decision making, we have a way to go. There's some new challenges, the online space. So I think we've made a lot of progress, no doubt. The quality of women and men's lives is far better. But then you also have the groups who are on the margins. So I think the big challenge now is to really make sure that equality spreads to all groups. And those who are on the margins, maybe, you know, women and men with a disability, for example, or, you know, some of the different groups who are very marginalised now. There's big challenges there, and that impacts the quality of our own society. Mm-hmm. That impacts everyone's lives if we don't manage that, and the economy, because equality is really good for the economy. Mm-hmm. You know, equal societies do better economically.
Yeah, and look, we see what's happening in all around the world, and as you say, you're just back from Hungary, so we're actually very privileged to have the type of society that we do have, and we often give out about politicians, but people like you make a real contribution. And I just want to thank you very much for coming in and taking the time to talk to me today. That was Francis Fitzgerald.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy,
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range,
weekdays from 4 on News Talk.